I turned 40, and then the week after I had the aneurysm. So my 40s have been, you know, it was sort of just when I began to feel like I was making progress recovering from the aneurysm, the COVID pandemic hit, and it went from a very personal experience to a universal experience that sort of everybody could understand because we were all going through difficult times.
This week, I'm chatting with Andrew Davey, who's the co-host of the Happy Hour with Heather and Guest podcast, a pop culture show around movies, music, and more. He's also the author of several books, of which we'll probably chat about later in the show. So, Andrew, welcome to Podcast Stories. How about you introduce yourself and your podcast?
Okay, well, I'm Andrew. It's great to be here. First of all, thank you. I work on a show called Happy Hour with Heather and Guest, which started out pretty much as a Facebook group that a friend of mine put together for, you know, it was sort of at the beginning of the COVID pandemic. So it was a chance for people just to have a safe haven to kind of go decompress, talk about music, listen about music and stuff like that. And then when I started helping, we incorporated interviews and live stream performances. So for the following year, because so much of the music scene had shut down and bands really weren't performing anymore, this was sort of an outlet for them. Initially, it was just on Facebook. And then I would say within the last couple of months, once shows were coming back and bands were able to perform live again, we sort of pivoted and we decided to just do more of a show where we would comment on albums that had just been released by contemporary bands. We still will do interviews, and occasionally there will be a live stream performance. But for the most part, it's just my friend Heather and I talking about albums that have just been released by bands that we really like. And strangely enough, because to look at me, you wouldn't think right off the bat, it's almost exclusively heavy metal. So underground heavy metal bands that haven't really quite made it to universal levels, but put out great music. Regionally, they're usually pretty big. And it's just sort of fun to talk about, you know, neither she or I have a background neither of us went to school for music appreciation or anything like that. So it's just sort of two fans that get together and talk about music.
And you mentioned in the green room before we were recording, you're from South Carolina. Is this band local to the area, or is it across North America, across the US? What's the breakdown from these bands?
So, I'm originally from New York City. My parents are in South Carolina, so I'm staying with them for this weekend. But all of the bands that we showcase are from all over the world. That's sort of the beauty these days of technology being where it's at. The other day we talked about a band called Slow Green Thing, who's from Germany. They're from Dresden, Germany. So we, at least I think they're from Dresden. I hope they're from Dresden, Germany. But Heather lives in Illinois. So sometimes she'll offer a band that's in the regional Illinois area or Chicago. But most of the time, we get bands from all over the world. We did a live stream tour last year from a band that's in Ireland right now called Pure Sonic Outcasts, and they would find bands to support them on the tour. So there was a band from Russia, bands from the US, there was a band from South America. So we don't really have, you know, like a state that we sort of comb for all of our stuff. It usually just comes from all over.
Okay, and you'd mentioned that people, if they were to look at you, for example, they wouldn't necessarily put you down as a heavy metal, hard rock fan. But this isn't your first podcast. You actually had a podcast that you sort of you sunsetted called A Fistful of Faithful, which ran, if I'm correct, for 8 years and had over 550 episodes. And that was all about rock and metal. So what was that experience like, and why did you give it up?
So the podcast started in 2013. And at the time, I was teaching in Hong Kong. And I was a fan of a podcast called Analyze Phish, spelled P-H-I-S-H, about the band Phish. And the entire show were these two comedians where one of them was a fan of the band and would basically try to convince his colleague that he should start listening to the music of Phish. And I thought, this is a really funny formula. So I thought to myself, well, I share an office with another teacher who's a very meek British fellow who listens to mostly like Britpop. And I thought, why don't we create a show where I try to convince him to listen to heavy metal music? So the first year or two of the show was basically once every 2 weeks, we would record an episode where I would play, you know, well-known bit like Iron Maiden or Metallica. Sometimes we would get a little bit harder or heavier, but it was always fun just to listen to our banter. There was one episode where he took over and tried to convince me to listen to bands like The Kooks and I forgot the guy's first name, but I know his sidekick is Scroobius Pip.
Okay.
So it was just fun. It basically started out, it was just a way to pass the time and have a good time. And, you know, the subject matter seemed to fit based on this other show, Analyze Phish, that I really admired and thought, okay, this will be a great way. And then when I moved back to the U.S., I continued to do the show with a revolving door of guests, usually colleagues that I was teaching with. Who were kind enough to grant me their time. And then during the pandemic, I would basically put out an episode a day by myself where I would just sort of do a deep dive on the internet and find a, you know, band on YouTube that I thought I would want to listen to that deserved to be, you know, promoted. So it really gave me something to do during my downtime, which was really helpful. And then that started to become less enjoyable because it was just a solo project. And I was also working with Heather on the Facebook group. So as the Facebook group transitioned into more of a show, I decided to stop doing A Fistful of Faithful and you know, work with a colleague again. I thought it would be more enjoyable, and it has been. But yes, but I don't have the tradition. You know, I think a lot of people think about the cliched look of a heavy metal fan having long hair and a lot of tattoos and multiple piercings and, you know, a denim jacket with a lot of patches on it. And I look more like I should be, you know, in the pages of a J. Crew catalog. So yeah, so that was always something that I ran with.
But it's interesting because you see a lot of what I call classic rock, which is basically my age. Now I look back, I hear about classic rock bands like, you know, Def Leppard, AC/DC, Iron Maiden, obviously metal. And a lot of them now have got short hair because they're a lot older. So they don't, some of them do keep their hair long, obviously, but a lot now have got short hair or shaved heads or whatever. And it's funny to see that, to your point about the stereotypical metalhead versus the actual artist on the stage.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's always interesting just in life, the expectation we have for how something is going to be versus how it actually is. You know, and I always thought when my brother graduated from high school in 2003, I took him to Madison Square Garden to see Iron Maiden and Motorhead and Dio play. He had spent some time in Italy in high school and became a fan of Iron Maiden through the host family he was staying with. So I thought that would be a great send off. So this is before smartphones. So I had a camera, you know, one of those that you would drop off, like a disposable film camera.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I have a photo of me standing next to someone I didn't know, but he was in the next seat, and he and I have our arms around each other, and he has, you know, like a purple mohawk, and you know, where he's wearing a, you know, one of the t-shirts of the bands, and of course I'm in like a polo shirt and khakis, and it just it couldn't be more different. But it always makes me smile, because that's the beauty of the music, is that you don't, it doesn't matter what you look like.
Yeah. And I think that's like, I always compare it to punk music and the evolution of punk music. And I know that obviously a lot of punk fans had a very dedicated look. But the main idea about punk, the same as metal, to your point, is it doesn't matter who you are and what you look like. It's about the insight and what you want to achieve and what you believe and what you're trying to, you know, what the music means to you. And it's cool to hear of that juxtaposition between the two of you at the same concert.
Yeah, that's really been such an eye-opening experience for me with working with Happy Hour with Heather and Guest, is that every band that we've spoken to or has played on our show has been extremely generous with their time. Everyone's been really cool. It's such a great community of people. Again, full of people who look radically different from each other and probably in their personal lives are radically different, but we can all sort of come together on this common appreciation of the music. It's been a great, both A Fistful of Faceful and Happy Hour with Heather and Guest have been really great experiences, different experiences, but it's all been wonderful to sort of, I mean, I guess that's also the beauty of, you know, the technology being where it's at in this day and age. I don't have an engineering background or a music background or anything. It was just sort of, hey, let's make a podcast and see what happens. You know, and that was sort of, with everything, it's always just sort of been the punk drive in a way of like, let's put out an album. You know, let's, you're probably familiar with, I'm blanking on the name of the band. It'll come to me in a second. Mm-hmm. But they had a zine called Sniff and Glue for a while, and one of the issues they put out, they put three guitar chords on the back and said, "This is an A, this is an E, this is a G. Now go form a band." So I always look to that sort of idea of really the only thing stopping you these days is just the drive. You know, the technology is there, and you can learn how to use it, but if you don't have the drive to get up and actually do it, it won't get done.
I remember, like, I don't recall the band, fortunately, but I remember that. I've heard that phrase before, you know, hear the chorus, just get out, you know, now go do a song. Because there's a really good video on YouTube somewhere about pretty much all songs are based around the most basic three or four chords tops. And it's just a variation there as to what you do if you sort of minor it or major it or whatever. So it's kind of cool to see everything evolve from that little tiny sliver of music.
At the last school that I was teaching, I had been an English teacher previously. And the last school that I was at, I remember I had a music appreciation club that would meet on Friday. And I showed them a clip from a movie in which Ian MacKay from the band Minor Threat and later Fugazi said that when they were growing up in the bands in DC, you know, they had enough money from one of their tours to create an album, but they didn't know how to do it because no, you know, there were no labels back then that really put out punk music and no one to sort of take. So they went to a record store, bought a record and undid the gatefold and then traced it out and essentially went to like a printing plant and had like 100 copies made all by just looking up in the Yellow Pages and calling. And then they traced it out and then Elmer's glued 100 copies together and then just sold them by themselves. And that always stuck with me. Again, the fact that if you know, and Heather and I have t-shirts for sale. One of the t-shirts we have is it's the two of us with our heads superimposed over Butch Cassidy and Sundance's picture at the very end of the film when they're when they're bursting out to. So, and underneath it says, "If you will it, it is no dream," which we both enjoy the film The Big Lebowski, and that's one of the lines that one of the characters says. I think he's paraphrasing a politician when he's saying that, but we prefer it from those. So that's basically the idea behind our show. If you will it, it is no dream. Yeah, so A Fistful of Faceful and now Happy Hour with Heather and Guest, it's basically just two people who are dedicated to getting the music out there for bands that we think should be listened to. And then every so often it's fun to sort of throw in our two cents about what we think of the music.
And it's interesting you mentioned the, if you will it, there's it's no dream. And you earlier, you'd been on about, it's about drive, making something happen when it comes to, you know, making a podcast, for example, or making music back in the early punk days. Because I know from your personal story, you've had to will it a lot. From something that happened 3 years ago now, I think, or about 3 years ago in your personal life?
I had just finished teaching that year. It was 2018. And I was going to fly to visit my folks for the summer. When I got to the airport, I felt fine until I got to my gate. And then I started to sweat uncontrollably like I had just run a marathon. And at the time, I remember thinking, this is strange, but I might be coming down with a cold or the flu. So I could take a nap on the plane and maybe I'll take some Advil. But thankfully I fell, you know, it's strange to say thankfully I fell, but thankfully I fell on the gate before I could get on the plane. And it turns out I had a ruptured brain aneurysm. So through a lot of really fortunate turns of events, I ended up going to the hospital, having surgery that saved my life, and then basically recovered for the next month and a half in the hospital. And then the last few years have basically been trying to sort of put the pieces back together. What's, you know, having the show to work on with Heather has been really helpful in that it's given me something to do to stay engaged. It was a sort of steep learning curve because very few people experience what I went through and heal close to 100%. I think I'm one of the lucky few that has very minor physical limitations. My balance isn't very good still. And sometimes if I move my head, it takes time for the vision to settle. But outside, I consider that to be sort of a nuisance problem. You know, it's sort of like a fly at a picnic. Like it'll bother you sometimes, but it's not a problem. And then, yeah, the last sort of, realizing that I had assumed eventually I would feel the same that I felt before the aneurysm. Like at some point, I will just return to normal again. And it took a long time to accept that while there would be elements of the former life that would be there, you know, I still live in the same apartment and I'm still friendly with the same people and I still have a great support system, that many things would be different. And it was sort of just accepting that even though it would be different, that's okay. And I'll figure things out as I go. The phrase that I like is I had to begin to look at obstacles like they were opportunities. Once I was able to do that, and that took about three, you know, it wasn't really until September of this year that I really felt comfortable with everything. Which I, you know, from what I've heard, I still participate in a lot of support groups and and work with people who have had traumatic brain injuries or are recovering. And I think the consensus is, you know, usually it takes a couple of years for the physical healing to show dividends and the emotional healing. Like I was under the impression that they would happen at the same time. And what I discovered was that the physical healing happened first, pretty much, and then, you know, then the emotional healing sort of came in afterward. And the physical healing is a little bit more easy to keep track of because, you know, one day you're walking with a cane and then 2 months later you're not. Well, you've certainly made progress, but feeling comfortable emotionally, there's really no indication to let you know that you've made progress. And I've also learned, you know, a lot of recovery happens in a spiral or not in a straight line. So there are days where you feel like you've lost all the progress you've made. You know, if you're having a bad day or if things are difficult. But yeah, I mean, fortunately, I could still, you had mentioned some of the books I'd written before. I discovered I could still write. So that was, again, that was something that I could do beforehand that I could still do now. And it was really a motivating factor. Doing the show with Heather has been a motivating factor. So it was understanding that there are going to be goals out there that I might not be aware of quite yet, but I still have goals, the show, writing, listening to music, certain things that I can still do that I appreciate. But eventually coming to that point took a few, and I don't think there could have been anything other than just the passing of time to sort of help out. You know, it was interesting because the COVID pandemic, I had just gotten a job as a tutor that was supposed to start in March of 2020. And that got canceled because I kept thinking, well, you're a teacher. That's what you know. You should go back to teaching. But being in the classroom was a little overwhelming. So I thought tutoring might be easier. And then the job got canceled. So rather than just be in my apartment by myself all day, I ended up moving back in with my parents for a little over a year, which turned out to be a blessing because I could focus exclusively on recovering rather than, you know, everyday life, going to work, you know, trying to further myself in whatever way. And it was during that time I realized that teaching is probably not the best fit. So when I go back in the new year, I'm actually going to begin go back to school for a mental health counseling degree so that I can hopefully help other people who are recovering or going through difficult times. But yeah, it's been a very surreal time over the last couple of, you know, I turned 40 and then the week after I had the aneurysm. So my 40s have been, you know, it was sort of just when I began to feel like I was making progress recovering from the aneurysm, the COVID pandemic hit and it went from a very personal experience to a universal experience that sort of everybody could understand because we were all going through difficult times. So it's been very surreal the last couple of years, but it's been great to have these things that I can work on and sort of stay engaged with that have been really helpful because often it's those little things that get you through a difficult day. You know, not a big revelation of anything, but just sort of confirmation that you're, you know, this episode was fun to record and people are going to like it. And that's enough to get me out of bed tomorrow.
And you've mentioned that obviously, we'd mentioned earlier, sorry, you'd written a few books. And one of the books that you've written Land of Illusions, which I believe it's been based on the personal experience of, you know, your aneurysm, COVID, dating scene, and sort of pulling everything together. Was that therapeutic for you at all? I know looking at reviews on Amazon, it seems people really took to it because of its personal approach and because of your writing style and how you brought them into the fold. And they could feel this sort of mix of comedy, but also like drama and let down, frustrating with the dating scene, for example. How was the writing for that book compared to your other books?
So this one actually started, I went to Macau in 2012 to teach. And my first thought was that this would be a travel book and that I would write about my experiences when I was in Asia. So I had begun sort of taking notes on what I would talk about. And then when I got back, I figured I needed more of a subject. So I thought, well, I could talk about some of the career paths I've been on, you know, teaching, traveling. And then I thought, well, my online dating life has been pretty funny with just regard to how a lot of the dates have panned out. And it wasn't until after the aneurysm that I thought, well, that's the through line. You know, having funny moments coupled with tragic moments. In the beginning of the book, one of the sentences I have is that comedy is just tragedy plus time. So I felt like a lot of the things that happened to me that you could label as tragic were actually really funny. There was a moment when I was in the hospital, my parents needed to access my computer, so they kept asking me for my password. And my father said that I would just be about to give it to them, and then I would lecture them on the importance of protecting that information, and I wouldn't give it to them. So eventually they found a way to get into my computer. But things like that, I thought, okay, this is, at the time, probably not very funny. But in hindsight, looking back on it now, it's hysterical. And then obviously some of the things that happened on the online dates, again, at the time, they seemed tragic. But it was very therapeutic. And one thing I realized was if any of this can help somebody to feel less alone, then that's the goal. So the deal I made was that I wouldn't hide anything that would make me embarrassed or make me look like I was a fool. But I changed everyone's names just in case. Like I didn't, you know, not that any of my friends or any of the dates I were on did anything that would have been embarrassing, but I didn't want anyone to feel embarrassed about anything. So I was more than willing to throw myself under the bus. If, you know, hopefully someone might be reading it and think, well, okay, I went on a date that didn't go so well, but nothing like this one. Or, you know, or I am recovering from an illness as well. And it's great to hear that this is not unique to me. So that it was very therapeutic. It was different in that most of the stuff that I write these days is mostly crime fiction. So I don't really have much practical experience with it. You know, it's a lot of just imagining what it might be like. But this was all pretty much based in reality. And thankfully, I really didn't need to embellish anything. So it was mostly like just sort of cataloging the experiences and trying to keep track of, okay, did this happen this way? Did it not happen this way? And then I sort of realized that didn't really matter as long as I got to the heart of what was trying to happen. But thankfully, even after the aneurysm, I've always had a pretty good memory for details. So it was pretty easy to recount sort of the general ideas behind everything. And then I was lucky enough to have a few people who agreed to read it in its earlier drafts. So that was really helpful.
And have you any plans to revisit it as an update? You mentioned earlier that obviously your journey after the aneurysm was more a personal one. And that equated to the more global one once COVID kicked in. So it moved you from this phase of your life to that phase. And I'm wondering, whatever kind of normality looks like post, there's no post-COVID, I guess, but once the world, I guess, learns to live with COVID, if that's the right description, are there any plans maybe to revisit and say, well, this is how my life has gone now, and this is where it could have gone had COVID never arrived? Or is that just on the back burner now and it's all crime fiction podcast?
No, I actually wrote something that I hope will be like an addendum, you know, like an epilogue type thing to the memoir, because I feel like when people write about recovery or tragedy or anything like that, they usually focus on the event itself, and very few times do you learn about what happened within the next, you know, 5 years or 10 years, which I really wanted to focus on that. Because while the physical recovery was really difficult, the emotional recovery was much longer and, you know, as difficult in different ways. So I wrote, you know, another like a 10,000 word edition that I'm hoping to put out this year that will sort of focus. I wanted to focus more on the emotional recovery during COVID. which I did. But I also wanted to look at any of the philosophical, you know, aspects of the fact, you know, was there something at play here that I happened to be at the airport at the right time, at the right place? You know, had I stopped to go to the bathroom beforehand, you know, that would have essentially changed everything. So I contacted a philosophy professor who gave me a couple of people I should read who focus on things like causality and things like that. So that's going to be, you know, I give a very brief and very amateurish description of sort of the philosophical take of what happened, as well as what, you know, what the recovery during COVID was like. And because I make a lot of movie and pop culture references, I included a bunch of those as well. So, you know, just sort of how, for me personally, when I think of something, usually the first thing I think of to make a comparison is, oh yeah, this is just like that scene in, you know, in this movie, or this is like the time that character said X. And you know, then since I know the context of it already, for everyone else, I sort of give the context in my analysis of how it's similar. There's a great book and then movie called Mother Night with that was written by Kurt Vonnegut, and the movie stars Nick Nolte, and he plays a character who is recruited by the U.S. government right before World War II to become an American Nazi sympathizer and propagandist in Germany. And when the war ends, he can't tell anyone that he was actually working for the U.S. So he becomes this sort of pariah. And at one point, he's walking down the street in New York City, and it's like 1946, and he says, I suddenly stopped walking because, you know, not because I was angry, not because I was sad. It was because I had no place to go. And I remember thinking, wow, that's how I felt at my lowest point recovering, when I really didn't know what I was going to do from, you know, I knew I wasn't going to go back to teaching, but I hadn't quite figured out what it was. So I thought that's a really power, you know, and for me, that was the first thing I thought of, was what movie is this similar to? Yeah. So the follow-up will have, you know, obviously real life situations involving me, but that'll be much more focused on the COVID recovery period, as well as sort of reminiscing about movie quotes that were inspirational.
That sounds an interesting read, and that's hopefully going to be next year you release that as an update.
Yeah, so I released the memoir on the anniversary of the aneurysm. So I was hoping to do the same thing with this. So it would be June 29th of 2022.
Okay, so a nice summer release to look forward to.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes. But yeah, certainly that would be great.
So Andrew, I've really enjoyed chatting with you today, and I'm sure the listeners are going to enjoy listening to this when the episode goes out. For anybody that wants to connect with you online or check out the podcast or your books, where's the best place for them to connect with you?
So if you go to my website, which is just andrew-davie.com, and that's D-A-V-I-E, it'll have links to everything, books, podcast, what have you. It's all social media. Everything is in one place, so it'll be easy to find.
And I can attest to that, because when I was checking Andrew's site out a couple of weeks back, actually, it's all there. It's like a smorgasbord? Smorgasbord? I can't remember the word right. That's the word. That's the one, yeah. It's resource heavy. It's amazing. So yeah, I'll leave the links to Andrew's site in the show notes. So if you're listening on your favorite podcast app, make sure as always to check out the show notes, and all the links will be there to take through to Andrew's site, where you can then find all his resources to interviews, videos, podcasts, books, the works, etc. So Andrew, again, I really appreciate you coming on the show today, and look forward to sharing your story with our listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.